You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on this show do not reflect the opinions of KUCI, its management, or the Regents of the University of California. Welcome to In the Garden with University of California Master Gardeners. I'm Tina Spindler, your host for today, a University of California Master Gardener, and I have a really exciting guest in the studio today, whose name is Nicholas Stadden. Hello, Nicholas. Thanks so much for coming today.
Tina, the greatest of good days to you. We've been trying to do this for weeks or months, I think.
This is so fun. Nicholas is going to talk to us today about one of my favorite topics in gardening, and that is how to use perennials in your garden effectively and also in our times of increased concern about water, how to use them efficiently.
That's right.
First, just want to give people a little bit of info about you, Nicholas. And first of all, Nicholas probably knows more about perennial plants than anyone I know. He's shaking his head, but he's being very modest. He is a horticultural consultant, a self-proclaimed plant nerd, which I think we all aspire to be plant nerds, right? And an awesome public speaker, as our listeners will soon hear. He's currently actually embarking on his fifth career, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And but mostly he says his career currently is about honing his passion for all living things, because his current office happens most of the time to be his backyard.
That's right.
Because that's where he gets cell phone reception, right?
Yeah, I live in Carbon Canyon, so we get no cell phone reception inside our houses. So when the cell phone rings, I have to go outside. And I have one spot where I've got like a chair I sit in and watch all this activity in the gardens, the bees and the butterflies and the birds. So it's been an unexpected positive. It really has. You get to see what's going on.
Instead of going to an office, your office is now outside where your career has been anyway, dealing with plants.
That's
but now
right.
Your actual office gets to be outside.
It's
as
really
well.
Fun. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Well, Nicholas, to my excitement, has brought many different books and periodical publications, and so he's going to share with us today basically how to use perennials in your garden. And what I have found in the last few years, that the older I get, the more I get away from annual plantings and the more I gravitate towards perennials, because they last for many seasons.
And they're pretty.
Then they're very pretty, especially the ones that you've introduced to the world through your careers at different growers and nurseries. So anyway, let's get started.
Just
and
far away, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So for those of you at home, the first thing you need is a pen and paper or a pencil, because we're going to have some, I'm going to put some things out, whether it's ideas or names of publications or names of plants, that it's going to be great for you to write down. So if you don't catch the name, can people call into a number, Tina? Or
what they can do, and that's a good question, is they can email our hotline.
Aha!
Yes.
Hotline.
Yes, we have a Master Gardener hotline. Hotline at uccemg.com. And also, some folks may be listening to this live on the radio, but other folks can just listen to our podcast, because this is published as a podcast on our Master Gardener website, which is uccemg.com. And so you could just, if you miss something, you can replay it.
How cool
so,
is that?
Yeah, when you miss something, just go to that podcast and you'll get it again.
And you know, the last time we spoke, we conspired a little bit, because we actually said, why don't we do some podcasting out in people's gardens and in botanical gardens or in garden centers and kind of talk about what's going on.
Yes, so I hope we get to do that in the future. We, frankly, the little group that does this radio show had never thought of doing on-location podcasts. So I'm going to put a bug in everyone's ear and see if we can figure out the technology to do that.
That would be a lot of fun.
It would really be fun.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess we could cheat, and we could have things like, you know, like horses' hooves, like, you know, the horses clapping, and the crunch of gravel. You've got to have all the sound effects for this, right? Because then you're there,
yeah.
So, Well, what I've done, I bought like a whole bunch of props with me that I thought it might be fun to show. And I've always been an avid reader. And it drives my bride bonkers because I have this big library at home. And if you're into plants, you have lots of books stuff like that. So one of the things that's changed in my jobs is I would travel probably for about 7 months out of the year. And wherever I went, I'd buy a book.
Oh, my gosh.
And then sometimes I'd buy two books or three books. And so, you know, the house was getting piled up with books, which is a big bone of contention with my bride. Because she says to me, well, you're never going to read them. And I said, but that's not the point. They're a great resource center,
are.
You know.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's an ongoing argument, everyone at home. If you have the same problem and you have a solution, please call me, right, and help me.
I tell my husband, there are worse addictions, right?
Yeah.
Being addicted to garden books and garden catalogs is, in the scheme of addictions, not that bad.
That's right. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
So what I've got in front of me, there's some really fun books. One of the hottest books on the market right now is called Bringing Nature Home.
Which I don't have. I don't have that one yet. I've got to go out and get it.
It's a great book.
Yeah.
It's written by Professor Douglas Tallamy, Tallamy. And for those of you listening at home who were at the Master Gardener Conference in Yosemite, the good professor actually presented there.
At the conference. Right. Yeah.
And his book is primarily written with a focus on the East Coast and the Midwest, but so much of it is applicable to what we're doing over here in California. And like all of us, we're all heading, and many of us have reached that point where we're not using any chemicals in the garden. I guess you could say we're gardening organically, but we know to reduce the amount of chemicals that we're using in our garden, we're going to have more bees, we're going to have more hummingbirds and caterpillars and butterflies, we're going to have more things that eat plants. But that's okay, because all these things attract the living creatures that we love so much. They make, you know, we get the emotion out. So this book talks about how to really create a sustainable garden. So Bringing Nature Home. Then I'm going to put that one down on the table. There it goes. The next one is a fabulous book by a lady who some of you might know called Nan Stearman. And Nan has been a long pal of mine and a great guiding hand as well. One of her second book that she wrote is called California Gardener's Guide, Volume 2. And it's just for the California garden. And lots of trees, perennials, shrubs, woody ornamentals. And we're going to go to the perennial section today and talk about some of the perennials that she suggests and how we use them.
And I have that book, and I love that book because it is specifically for California, and the way that it's arranged is so simple in that it has a page for each plant that she's talking about with the photo.
Yep.
And so for those of us who have ADD and, you know, don't want to read through a lengthy, you know, tome, it's just organized incredibly easy to follow.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
Yeah, I love it.
You should have written the foreword for this. Yeah.
Maybe next time.
You might have done that.
No.
And then for the real plant enthusiasts, more for the native type plants, this book is called California Native Plants for the Garden. Three authors, Bart O'Brien, Bart, who was the curator of plants for the Rancho Santa Ana Botanical Garden for many years, and Bart has now moved up to the Bay Area where he's running a botanical garden up there. David Fross, F-R-O-S-S, who is a superb plantsman and owns a nursery called Native Sons.
Yes, great.
Which is north of Santa Barbara, right?
Yes, and I mean, you can find their plants in a lot of nurseries, and I've had great luck with
He's
the ones
a
I've
super
tried.
Chop as
yeah.
well, yeah.
yeah.
And then one of my favorite lady plants ladies, and her name is Carol Bornstein, so Bornstein. And I had not seen Carol for years and signed up last autumn to a day at the Los Angeles Museum of Natural History, which I'd never been to before. It's kind of down near downtown. and blow me down if I didn't bump into Carol, and Carol is now the curator of plants there.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, awesome. She's, in fact, that would be a great place for a podcast. It's
sure.
fantastic.
Yeah.
So the site is actually, the building is the old library of Los Angeles. It's a beautiful building full of all the things that you find in the Natural History Museum, exquisite gardens, absolutely exquisite.
Which have recently been redone.
Yes.
They've
spent
now.
Millions on it.
Yeah.
And so Carol's the curator of plants. She's a great lady. She's, you know, she'll stop what she's doing, show you around, talk to you about the plants, etc. And then if you're into roses, because we all love roses, if you're into roses, they have a huge rose garden, which is some big trialing and evaluation rose garden for L.A. I didn't know this.
Is that it?
Must be like 2 acres.
Yeah.
I mean, hundreds
big,
of roses.
Big, yeah.
So once again, so California native plants for the garden by Bornstein, Frost, and O'Brien. So that's a killer read. And then, drop that on the table. We've done that. And then one of my favorite books by a chap called Bob Perry. Bob Perry is an educator and plantsman and consultant. And he wrote the Bible for us for California plants. It's called Landscape Plants for California Gardens. And it is, I think, the absolute must-have for all of us. It's got literally thousands of plants in it, exquisite pictures, whether the plants are in flower, whether they have berries, when the berries ripen. Great narrative supporting the pictures. And then he's also put, I think it's the Sunset Garden zones in there.
Yes.
Which I must confess I struggle with. I'm trying to learn them. But I think so many people use those as a benchmark. But this is a must-have book. Now, when you buy it, it's a pretty heavy book.
It's a tome. It's quite a tome, yeah.
It needs two men and a small boy to help you carry it from the bookstore to...
But the good news is I've never not found a plant I was looking for in that book. You know, whereas other books are limited in their scope, so
that's
you
right.
may not find something that's a little less common.
It's great,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And you've got trees and shrubs and perennials and all sorts of things. And then kind of quickly... I don't know what you're all subscribing to, but here are some of my picks. So Pacific Horticulture, which I think we get 4 copies a year of. It's under kind of new editorialship. As of a couple of years ago, they're doing a great job with the magazine. Talks about California plants from Oregon. And then Pacific Horticulture, they have seminars that you can go to and hear great speakers and stuff like that. And then... The American Horticultural Society has a super magazine called The American Gardener. Now, yes, they focus a little bit on California, but it's really fun to learn about what's going on in the Midwest and on the East Coast and back in the southeastern part of America. And they also have their gardens at a place called Alexandria, which is about an hour from Washington, D.C. in a fast car.
That's right.
And it's on the banks of the Potomac. And the view is... just awful. Oh, this gorgeous river. It's about 2 miles across with big trees. I mean, it's lovely. When I say awful, I'm being sarcastic.
Yeah. They have green back there, not brown like us.
Yeah. Lovely. And then Fine Gardening, put out by Taunton Press, which is a wonderful book. And I'm very humbled because I've actually just written my first article for these people. So I'm really
so excited. What issue will it appear in?
Well, it's my top 4 plants to put in my garden for 2017.
Oh, cool.
It's a very pictorial magazine.
And when will your article come out?
Do you know what month? I think it's in the autumn.
In the autumn?
Yeah. So what they do is they ask regional experts... And right now, Tina and I are looking at a regional pick for the Northeast because they go around America. So the lady from the Northeast has picked out 4 of her favorite plants, bloodroot, nodding onions. Nodding onions. Where do they get a name like nodding onions?
But they live in the Northeast. That name,
And anyway, so that's a great magazine. The magazine that I believe is going to become... probably the number one garden magazine in the United States in the next few years is called Garden Design. And Garden Design had been around for a great many years, and for one reason or another, they got into trouble, and they were bought out by a very enterprising guy. And he now has created this magazine, 4 copies a year, no advertisements. It's just exquisite.
Oh, wow. I'm looking at it. It is exquisite. The photos are gorgeous.
They're really great. Yeah. And so you can subscribe to that. Now, for those of you at home, you can go online to gardendesign.com. And if you mention my name, Nicholas Stadden, right, they will give you your first copy free of charge.
I didn't know that. No. I'm going to do that because I don't subscribe to that. So,
it's really cool.
That is cool.
And then
they always like freebies.
They do it.
Show. You know, who doesn't like freebies?
That's
right?
It. It's kind of it's a good value.
Yeah.
And then so here's something you probably need to sleep on. And Tina just joined the Royal Horticultural Society.
I did because I went on a trip with a number of master gardeners in May, and we went to the Chelsea Flower Show, which was on my bucket list of things to do.
How fun was that?
I was awestruck and speechless, but we joined the Royal Horticultural Society to get our tickets, and so now I'm a member. And I feel very royal and elegant. And
well, you've got your crown on. In fact, you've got your diamond tiara on today. Yeah, we dress good for everyone, right?
Yes, we do. On the radio, it's so important.
Yeah. So the Royal Horticultural Society, there's lots of benefits, but one of the most important benefits is a magazine that you get on a monthly basis. I think the membership is about $82 a year. You get to see what's going on in Europe. And also they publish articles about America and gardens in Japan, all over the world. You get to see what's going on in Europe. And there are so many plants that they talk about that we can grow over here. So, for instance, I've got the July copy in my hand. The June copy had this wonderful spread on lavenders.
Oh, perfect.
Half the lavenders they talked about are lavenders we're using in California.
Sure.
So it's really it's an exquisite magazine. And the members of the RHS get to go to the Chelsea Flower Show, but they reserve the first 2 days for the membership only.
And we went on the first day.
I've never got to the first day. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Did you meet the Queen?
We did not meet the Queen, no.
Did you see the Queen?
We did not see the Queen, no.
Well, blow.
No, we were just looking at gardens, but it was no one gardens like the English.
It's kind of fun,
goodness,
isn't it?
It was over the top.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
So that's called the Get Magazine. And then, you know, when I was at the newsstand the other day, I picked up a couple of sunset. They do these, what would you call this, like periodicals?
And they're specific focus. They'll each have a specific focus.
Perfect. Yeah.
So I mean, they have the magazine that comes out every month.
Yes.
But in addition to that, if you look on newsstands, you can see Sunset publications that have a specific focus, like the ones you're holding.
There we are. And the two I picked up, one is outdoor living, because my bride wants to, she wants to create a more user-friendly garden. My garden is an organized jumble, you know, lots of plants.
It's a bit of
a mess, you know. So outdoor living. So it talks about patios and furniture and maybe bring in a bit more structure. And then a really super publication that's called Small Yards, Big Ideas. And I got both these publications at Barnes & Noble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
And so they're like $12 each, right? So, but at great value. And then when you're done with them, okay, you can keep them. Or what you do is you open the front cover and you sign inside your name. And then you give it to your best friend.
Oh, what a cute idea.
That's it.
Yeah.
And the condition that you give it to your best friend is that when they have read it or got some information out of it, they sign it, and then they pass it on to their best friend.
I love that idea. That's a great idea. I have a little garden club. I think we'll start that.
Every
meeting, have people bring the publications that they're, you know, kind of finished with and pass them on.
Fun. Giving books is really fun.
Yeah.
So I don't know about, you know, Tina or myself, but I've, you know, developed this pretty big library, and I'm in anguish at the moment because, you know, my nephews and nieces, they're all back in England, and it's okay. So, you know, I probably got like 100 or like 125 books, and there's some good books in there because I like to have them, if I can, signed by the authors. So it's like, what do I do with this library? I guess I'll have to give it to Master Gardeners.
Oh, we would love it.
That's okay. Kind of a...
We have a little library here at the Extension Office.
That would be a fun
office.
Thing, yeah.
So if you ever do want to get rid of some of them, we would gladly take them. Yeah.
Good. Fun. So I guess our goal, I think we have to be out of here by about 6:30 tonight, and the time right now is about 10 after 11. So for those of you at home, so quickly into the kitchen, get a couple of sandwiches, get the lemonade poured.
Oh, sadly, we only have an hour, but we have we still have a lot of our hour left, and I think what would be great for our listeners, because I know when I first started gardening, you know, you go to the nursery and the annual plants are always the ones that catch your eye because those are grown by the growers to bloom inside, you know, the 6 packs or the 4 inches or gallons or whatever.
And they're beautiful.
And they're beautiful. Yeah. And so you grab them and you plant them. And you may or may not realize that they're only going to last you a few months because they are annuals and they are meant to, you know, be done in one season. And the perennials sometimes are in bloom at the nursery, but sometimes they're not. And so it's a little bit more of a challenge for especially a beginning gardener to know the value, because you see a 6-pack of Shasta daisies and it's like, you know, because they're not doing anything.
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
just these, you know, green little plants.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think if you could introduce our listeners, especially those who are newer to gardening, you know, what a perennial plant is
okay.
and how you plant it and what you think about in a garden when you're trying to design and create with perennials.
Sure.
That'd be a good place to start.
Okay, yeah. okay. So I guess this is kind of like a game of bingo where they say, eyes down, look in, here come the numbers. So I think right from the get-go, perennials have been on this wave or crest of opportunity in America for the last 20 or 25 years. And what has happened is that there have been some very enterprising breeding programs that have come to light.
Thank goodness.
And many of these perennials that were created 20 or 25 years ago are still being sold today. And I'm in the new plant business. That's kind of my primary focus. But if you said to me, Nicholas, how do you recognize a good perennial?
Yeah.
So you go shopping at your local independent garden center. We're in Southern California, so the Green Thumb, Green Arrow, or Rogers Gardens, or Plant Depot. Or you'd go to somewhere like Lowe's, the home centers that have lots of different plants for you to look at, and everyone does a great job. And what you would do is you'd watch what perennials they carry for 2 or 3 years.
Ah.
Now the history book will show. Because I'm in the business, I get these kind of secret catalogs from growers. And I have developed my top 10 kind of grower catalogs. The unfortunate thing is that because of the cost of producing catalogs, you know, sometimes, you know, it's too expensive, so you go online. I like to look at the paper catalogs.
I do too.
Yeah. But so what will happen is you'll see you'll see what perennials they carry in their catalogs year after year after year. So to give you an example, there is a marvelous company in Santa Fe called High Country Gardens.
Yes. And I get their catalog.
Yes. And so tonight, when we've let you go at 6:30, okay, it's really 12 o'clock we let you go. Or 11:30 we let you go. So when we let you go, jump online, and you can go onto the High Country Gardens website. You can order a catalog, and David will send you a catalog. He is a superb plantsman with a really great eye for perennials. And I would put my head in a noose and say every single perennial that is in his catalog will be a winner. And somewhere in the region of about probably 60 or 70% of those perennials will work beautifully for us in California. Ask him a question online, you know, you can buy these plants from him. He, you know, you buy him a little 4-inch pot.
Oh, mail
stuff
order.
Like, yep,
yeah,
mail order.
Yeah.
So that's a really good look. So I've developed this series of catalogs where I watch what perennials stay in these catalogs for like 4 or 5 years. A lot of perennials will disappear after 1 or 2 years. They just don't hold up in the garden. So don't be afraid to go garden peeping. Okay? Now, you have to be careful when you're out there garden peeping that you don't get arrested by the local police, okay? Because people might not like you leaning over the fence or looking through a hole in the wooden fence. See what your neighbors are growing. Go to other neighborhoods. Look for well-established clumps of perennials, right? Go to the local botanical garden.
Absolutely.
Huntington Library is a marvelous
place to go.
The LA Arboretum. And these are great because these are day trips for you, and they've got restaurants there, and you can get something to eat and stuff like that. And so you see some wonderful things. Look at the perennials that are being used in a full sun position. And look at the perennials that are used in shade or dappled shade. So it's a very versatile group of plants, very rewarding, emotionally fulfilling. Colors of the leaves, colors of the flowers, etc. In Southern California, we're blessed because a lot of the perennials will give us some type of interest all year round.
But that's the thing I love, if you choose the right perennials. I'm a flower person, and so
I would never have guessed.
Can you imagine that? And so I'm always looking for the flowering part of the plant. But I have now learned that if you choose your perennials wisely, you can get both a show of color, but in the off season, you can also have some beautiful foliage.
Perfect.
Which is not the case if you're just dealing with annuals.
Yeah,
you know? It's one and done. So
that's true.
Good research leaves you with options for a garden that looks great all year long.
Great.
Yeah.
So if you said to me, Nicholas, give us a quick plant that springs to mind, heucheras are a great example.
Exactly.
You know, in the colder regions of America, heucheras or coral bells is the common name. You know, they'll be completely deciduous, but in California, many of them will hold their leaves during the winter months, and they'll give you some, you know, beautiful show. A perennial, just quickly going back, I should have explained this at the beginning. So an annual is a plant that lives just for 1 year, normally. I mean, sometimes if we have a real mild winter, I guess we have mild winters here. So they winter over, but when they come back that second season, they look pretty ratty, so pull them out.
Yeah.
So a perennial is a plant that comes back year after year after year. And most perennials will last, I believe, 4 or 5 years. I have a geranium Roseanne, which, you know, I wasn't going to talk about her, but we will talk about her. Don't let me forget.
Behind her back.
Yeah, behind her back. I have a geranium Roseanne that's been in my garden now for nearly 8 years, which is incredible. That's a long-lived perennial. In Europe, the annual market is spiraling downhill out of control. Europeans are just discovering perennials, and the annual market has collapsed because everyone wants to buy perennials. We're also seeing a fantastic trend, and it's called the annualization of perennials. And so what's happening is, instead of people putting annuals in containers, they are putting perennials where they would normally have put their annuals. That's where you get the annualization of perennials, right? But you're leaving them in those containers for, you know, 2 or 3 years, or leave them in for a couple of years, and then during the colder season you can remove them, quietly divide them and place them in the garden, or give them to a friend, you know.
Which I think is so exciting to me.
Yeah.
Because the older I get, the less I want to replant.
There you go.
Every season. It becomes exhausting if you're constantly having to do that.
Yeah.
And with the perennials, you have these options.
That's
of
right.
Creating these containers, these exhibits that look good for a much longer period of time. I want to talk about that more, but we're coming up on our half hour mark, so I need to take care of, I told you this would go by so fast.
It's going too quickly.
Yeah. So I just want to let everyone know that you are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. And to remind you that the opinions expressed on this show do not reflect the opinions of KUCI, its management, or the regents of the University of California. So let's get back to this new concept of, or relatively new concept, of designing containers, which, you know, a lot of our listeners in Southern California don't have big yards, or they don't have the time or the water these days to take care of big yards. And so this idea of having very nice containers full of perennials that will give you a show for a long period of time, I think, is fascinating.
It's lovely, isn't it?
Just what our listeners are interested in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have an infatuation with containers. And containers really came rushing to the market probably about 10, 15 years ago. I mean, they've always been out there, but a lot of people went over to Vietnam and to Thailand and places like that and got very large containers made inexpensively.
Interesting.
And so, you know, containers were always quite expensive. So the first thing that happened, and these are top quality containers, so the first thing that happened was the price was lowered. You know, more people started carrying containers. They became more affordable for those of us that love to garden in containers. And also, they started having different colored containers. Good Lord! What?
You know, not just terracotta.
There, that's what containers used to be, didn't
they?
Right,
right.
So suddenly we saw all these great containers that were red and blue and green and yellow and white, you know. And these are highly glazed containers. So you could buy plants that you put into these containers, and the plant color accentuated the color of the container, and the container colored accentuated the plants that you put in the container. So if you said, well, give me an example, right? So Santalina, gray Santalina that has a pretty yellow flower.
Yeah.
So let's just imagine that you took a bright blue, highly glazed container and just filled it with gray Santalina that had these pretty yellow flowers. So you've got this wonderful silver color of the Santalina and the pretty little yellow flowers with this heart-moving color of this blue container. I mean, they really jump out at you. It's pleasing. It's soft on the eye. So I think that the whole opportunity of putting perennials in containers is tremendous. And what I would encourage you is to unleash your creative side. Now, you might be sitting at home and saying, well, I don't have a creative side. So
that's what I usually say.
So, you know, you all do. You all do. So it's just literally a case of going down to the garden center or the home center, getting a cart, finding a container that you like the look of, putting it in your cart, and then going around where you find the rows of perennials and just saying, you know, that perennial would look pretty in this colored container, and just start buying.
Nicholas, that's the best advice, because I am not good at design. Love plants, pretty good at taking care of plants, propagating, etc., but not good at design. And my sister, who's an artist, told me, because she has marvelous containers, of course, because she has an eye for this, and she told me, she says, all you have to do is exactly what you said. Get the cart, put the container in, she says, and just arrange the plants and choose them and just look at them and see if you like it. You don't have to tell yourself that you're good at design.
Exactly.
Just look at it. Your eye will tell you whether it's something that is attractive
exactly.
to you.
It's easy, isn't
it's,
it?
It's really easy when you do it that way. Yeah. But if you go and you just go to the garden center and you're completely overwhelmed with all the plants, it's almost, you know, too overwhelming to accomplish anything. So it's better if you look at your cart as a little mini garden.
Exactly.
And design right in your cart.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is
well,
I think
great
we're going
advice.
We're going in the right direction,
right?
Yeah,
exactly.
Right? So really a couple of important points that when you're container gardening, don't forget at the bottom, if the container doesn't have a hole, make sure at the garden center that they drill a hole for you.
Absolutely.
Don't leave the garden center without that hole being made. And if the guy says, well, you know, we can't do it for you, then go back to the container side and get another container with a hole in it, because it's got to be able to drain. And then when the soil, you've got to have a soil that actually will hold some moisture. So I always go for like an organic type mix, something, you know, that looks good. A lot of garden centers will have a recommendation, so ask them what they recommend. And then before you put the soil in, make sure you put a piece of broken pottery over the hole at the bottom, so that will allow the water to drain out. You can buy these little fiber circles, right, that come in a pack. And I would suggest not using those. They're fiber circles. You can actually put them over the hole. What will happen is the soil will actually clog the fiber up, and it won't drain.
Yeah, there you go.
And then, so when you buy your perennials, you know, they're going to be small, right, in a 4-inch, whatever it might be. You might buy a gallon. But remember, these perennials are going to grow. So don't put, you know, I always do perennials to excess, okay? I have this saying that too much is not enough, okay? Too much is not enough.
And you always see one more that you need to
That's
have.
That's it, yeah. So don't, these perennials are going to grow. So when you've got your first container, just go back and get another one. Okay, make sure you've got the primary breadwinner's credit card upon your person, okay? And then here's the deal. If you get caught, right, if you pull up to your home and you've got containers and all these pots and perennials and sacks of soil in the back of the car, right, and the primary breadwinner comes out, whether it's a boy or a girl, right, man or woman, and says, what are you doing? What's are these for us? Fib. Don't tell them the truth. Tell them, no, these are for Mary or George down the road, and
I'm just
looking after them.
I'm designing them for them. Yes.
That's it. And then just wait a couple of days and do these in the garden. Right?
Spread them out
in
different locations.
don't be afraid to use perennials that will trail. There are some very beautiful perennials that will trail, or sedums, or the non-invasive ice plants, delospermas, that will trail down the side of the container that will look great. And if you're going to put these on the patio, where people come and have a barbecue or they have a libation or a glass of lemonade in the evening with you, put them close enough where people can actually reach out and touch the plants.
Oh, what a good idea.
Yeah, because there's so much about the touch and the feel
the
and
sensory.
The textures. Yep,
yeah.
Yep. And it's kind of exciting when your guest sits down, or your family member, or even yourself, and they have a container of perennials nearby, watch for the plants that they reach out and touch. Because, you know, as a gardener, your garden's for you, right? I mean, that's the most. But it's also for the people you love. You know, they enjoy it too. So watch the plants that they go to, plants that they touch and reach, because then you can have more
idea.
Of those.
Yeah. And I especially liked your comment about not being afraid to do trailing plants, because I know the containers that attract my eye the most are the ones that have different heights and different textures. And I'm sure you've heard the phrase thriller, filler, spiller.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
And if you just remember that little phrase, thriller, filler, spiller, and you choose your perennials and you make sure you have a thriller, something that is either brightly flowering or great foliage or tall, and then you have the spillers that come over
the
edge,
side, yeah,
and then
yeah.
fillers, you know, to fill it in and make it look lush and full.
Yeah.
I think that's, for those of us who are not naturally design talented, just remembering those three things allows pretty much everybody to create a really attractive...
It's a good guideline,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, really attractive container. Or garden, I mean, in your garden beds as well. Yeah. So what do you advise folks to do in terms of care of these perennials once they've got them planted?
Okay, so pertaining to care, perennials they're pretty self-sufficient, which is the good thing about them. And when you're planting them, I would certainly advise mixing in some slow-release fertilizer. And slow release, all these slow release fertilizers, they're heat and water sensitive. So when it's warm and when you're giving a little bit of water and what have you, that's when they release their nutrient. As these perennials fill in, yes, their roots are going to grow, but their foliage or flowers is also going to shade the soil. So that alone is going to hold more moisture in the soil. If it's just bare soil and the sun's beating down on it, that's going to dry out a little bit. So I think the rule of thumb would be that during the growing season, you're probably going to give your perennials a drink twice a week. Many of them are very drought tolerant, which is great. And if they're water sensitive, they will quickly let you know, because the leaves will look a little bit droopy, the flowers will kind of go down. You can also use a product, and I can't remember the name, and Tina, I know you're going to know it, which is you can mix these granulars,
and they
digest the water.
They absorb water, and then they release it.
Perfect.
And there's a couple different brand names.
I can't remember them.
I don't remember them. But you can look for, their water retention additives that you can put in the soil.
And if you're kind of on the technical side, which I'm not, from a nearby sprinkler, you can get these great attachments. Let's say you've got soaker hoses, whatever. You can bring a soaker hose or a sprinkler into your container, and then when you put on your other irrigation system, it will water the container as well.
Especially if you have a drip system, those are pretty easy to add to.
Yeah, they are.
And run a little line up to the pots, which I never do because I'm lazy. But it's a great idea for those who are more handy than I am.
True. but let me address that.
Okay.
Because here's the deal. Gardeners at home, we need to remove this phrase yard or yard work. It's gone. We are not using that anymore. What we use is the term gardening.
Yes.
And we get to go gardening. We don't get to do yard work. And I think it's so important that if you love the plants, that you're going to be out there tending and nurturing, and watering is very therapeutic.
Oh, it's so stress relieving for me.
It really is.
I think that's why I purposely don't learn how to do irrigation systems.
Yeah,
it's because I like to hand water myself.
It's a good way. And also, when you're watering, you're looking at your plants, you're looking at them in detail and what have you. And all of you at home, I know you've had this happen. You've been out there with the watering can, or you've been deadheading, and look out, here comes Miss Hummingbird. She'll come right up beside you, or in the evening you might be out there, and a sphinx moth or a hawk moth, right? I call them hawk, H-A-W-K moths. You guys call them hawk, a hawk moth, right?
Oh, but we love listening to you talk.
or there'll be a butterfly that comes along, and they're just completely oblivious of you being there. So that's the fun.
It's an opportunity to discover things. I mean, when I was out hand watering a week ago, I stumbled upon a couple dozen swallowtail butterfly larvae on my fennel. And if I had not been hand watering, if I was just letting the sprinklers do
it,
I wouldn't have seen them. So, it really is, you as a person are the best thing for your garden.
Yeah.
And it's the best thing for you
in
return.
It's called horticultural therapy.
There you go. It's a real thing.
It is.
Yeah.
So here, look, get this. Doctors in England are now having a serious discussion about prescribing, not pills, but gardening as a method of healing and wellness, etc.
Sure.
So can you imagine your doctor prescribing, Mr. Stadden, you are going to do 5 hours in your garden this week. How about that?
I'm going to tell my husband that, right?
It'd be great.
Dinner is not made because I had to take my gardening medicine.
That's it. It's good.
Well, so, Nicholas, we have about 10 minutes or so left. I know it's gone by so fast. And so what I would really think everyone would love is you could go through some of your favorite perennials that we could experiment with in our yards.
So and so for all of you, I think I'm actually I've got Nan Nance Dearman's book out, which is called California Gardener's Guide, Volume 2. She must have done a Volume 1 if there's a Volume 2, right? And what I did was I actually went through this, because you can use this as a resource, and there's some great perennials. One of my favorite perennials are artichokes, you know.
The eating kind.
The eating kind.
Wow, so you get a double benefit from that.
You actually get more.
Wow.
Okay, so artichokes, I love their prehistoric look. You've got these great leaves. You've got the fruit, you know, that you can boil and use them as a starter for your dinner table. Once the fruit goes to seed, you've got these exquisite flowers, huge purple, blue flower heads.
Thistle-looking.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
They're magnets for honeybees. The native honeybees, the indigenous honeybees, and the bumblebees will favor these over anything else in your garden. And for those of you that are into flower arranging, harvest the flowers at the end of the season, bring them indoors, and you can use them in your dried flower arrangements.
Oh, wow. I've never tried that.
It's a great plant.
Wow.
And then, you know, you really need to trim them up at the end of the season. I've actually known people that have had artichokes in their garden for a lot of years. They're really quite long-lived. And there's some new varieties out that have more fruit than their predecessors, but I look for the older ones.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because they get bigger. I mean, they'll get like 4 or 5 feet tall.
They do get big, yeah.
Huge.
Yeah.
They also bring a wonderful element of silver or gray into your garden. So if you have, maybe you have too much green, maybe you have a bit more blue, silvers will bring the blue element out, they'll bring the gold element out in the garden as well. So that's artichokes, and everyone carries artichokes.
What a great idea. I would not have thought of that.
Now the other one, an old plant, Acanthus molus. The common name is bear's breech. And I think there's another name, Grecian pattern plant.
Oh, that I think, I didn't know. Yeah. I know bear's breech.
Yeah.
I think that's what Californians know it as.
Yes.
Yeah.
The plant is as old as dirt. This is a must-have for your shade area as a perennial. So you've got these wonderful, huge leaves, right? They're probably about, I don't know, 2 feet long and like a foot wide. They're magnificent. The flower stalks will get 4, 5, 6 feet high.
That's what I love about them.
They're great.
Stunning.
They are.
Bring a vertical element to the garden.
They do.
Yeah.
And they are extremely drought tolerant once established.
Now, I did not know.
No, I've discovered that quite by accident.
Oh, wow.
There is a bear's breech on Barranca in Azusa, right, in full sun. And this bear's breech gets the edge of a sprinkler. It's right by the road. It gets reflected heat. And in the springtime, when it's cooler, the plant looks incredible. In the summertime, it gets burnt to a crisp. And when the temperatures cool down in the autumn, away this plant
comes back
again. And it's been there for 10 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I need to get some of these.
Yeah, so this is absolutely a must-have. Give her plenty of room because she'll get to be quite a large plant. So that's a must-have. And then Galadias. I am a real fan of Galadias. There's been some exceptional breeding of Galadias that have happened in the last 10 to 15 years. The plant that changed all the breeding was one that was called Fanfare. Fanfare. And Fanfare had tubular flowers or tubular petals instead of the petals as we know them.
Wow.
Very compact, very long blooming season. They've now got, there's the regular Fanfare, there's an orange Fanfare, there's a red Fanfare.
So these would be great for containers.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Hummingbirds, butterflies love them. And then you've got the regular flavors. There's one called Arizona Sun. There's a killer plant called oranges and lemons, absolutely to die for. Some of the flowers are this kind of orange, lemon, yellow, gold color.
Oh, what a great combo.
Fantastic. And they actually have quite a long stem on them. So you can harvest the flowers, because they're repeat bloomers, harvest the flowers and get a really small container, maybe just 2 or 3 inches high, and you can have a small posy of Galadia flowers.
Now you're talking my language.
Yeah.
I love to bring flowers inside the house.
That's cool.
I love that.
So we call those migrating flowers.
Migrating.
They migrate in and out. Okay? And then, of course, the Asclepias or the butterfly milkweed. Now, I must confess, I need to do more research here. There are a number of native Asclepias or butterfly milkweeds, And more of the nurseries are starting to carry them. There are actually four of them that are indigenous to California. Now, the native Asclepias, they're not terribly beautiful to look at. But, of course, we all know how important they are.
For the monarchs.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you've got the other, what I call the more tropical Asclepias, which have bright gold flowers or bright red flowers. Silky gold is a yellow one. I think there's one that's called red butterflies, which has a red flower. Now, it is well known that on these more tropical cultivar selections that we should treat them as herbaceous. So that is to say, once a year we would go in and we would cut them back and let them put their new growth out. It's important that the new growth and the flowers on the new growth, that's very important for the butterflies. So go online or ask your local nursery expert.
And that's a good point to let people know that a number of perennials do need to be treated in a herbaceous manner, and
yes.
that is cut back
yes.
in order to rejuvenate them for the next season.
And so what do we do with all the trimmings and the cuttings? They go on to the...
Well, we can compost them.
Yes, compost heap, right? So the compost heap, that'll be another conversation.
Exactly.
Right?
We have a separate show on composting.
So lots of penstemons. I'm a real fan of penstemons. The one that I've become really interested in is called the foothill penstemon, which is actually native to our area.
It is.
And for those of you that, if you ever drive the 605 freeway, so north of the 60, going north up to the San Gabriel Mountains, on the right-hand side of the road, so you get on the 60 and you turn onto the 605 and you go north, there are some incredible native communities of the foothill penstemons.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, underneath some of the power lines.
Wow.
And I'm not. It's where there's a gravel pit there where they've disturbed some of these gravel pits or they've left the areas. And right beside the freeway, you're driving along and you see this big cloud of purple. You have to be really careful because you're doing like 70. You're probably doing 85, Tina, because I hear your pedal to the metal in your car. Right, but you see these great communities. So what you have to do is find out where these communities are, and then when the plants go to seed, you hop the fence and you gather all the seed.
And hopefully not get arrested.
Get arrested.
Yeah.
Well, it's all for a good cause.
And one note about that, because I do plant that in my yard, and it does not like to be irrigated a lot. So be sure, I put mine next to open space where I don't do a lot of irrigating.
Yeah, good for
when
you.
When I've tried them in the flower beds that get a little more water, they don't like it and tend to poop out. So
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Good point.
Not too much water.
And then I got a real reminder. You know, because of the job I do with kind of a lot of new plants, sometimes you forget the older ones. And so in fine gardening, because I get my copy 4 or 5 times a year, and I read about what people recommend, and someone was recommending Virginia. And I haven't heard anyone talk about Virginia for probably several years.
And that was in my grandma's garden.
It's a great plant.
Yeah.
You know, dappled shade, these marvelous cabbage-like leaves, which are shiny. And if you get just the smallest amount of winter chill, they turn a great red or ruby red color. They have the most exquisite flowers in the early springtime that, you know, I mean, they raise like this sort of anywhere from 8 to 10 inches above the plant, and they come in clusters. And there's some new varieties of Virginias now.
Ooh, that's good.
You know, that have, instead of having the soft pink flowers, they have rose red flowers.
Oh, my gosh.
I think there's one called Bressingham Ruby, which is really, really great. So it's not just about the new. It's about these older ones. So Virginias love a dapple shade position. If you've got a container for a dapple shade position, that works
as
well.
You know, we have about 1 minute left. Do you want to pick your favorite, if we haven't already talked about your favorite perennial?
Oh.
I know, it's too hard. It's like asking a parent
Geranium Roseanne.
Okay, let's talk about Geranium Roseanne.
So Geranium Roseanne was actually identified as the number one perennial in the world about 3 years ago. it's a whole show to tell you how that process works. Geranium Roseanne will do well in a dappled shade or full shade position. She will do well in a full sun position.
Whoa.
But personally, I think she likes that dappled shade position. Buy a 1 gallon plant. In 1 year, the plant will be about 3 feet across and about 15 inches high. She has thousands of blue-purple blooms. And she's probably like a 10-month out of the year bloomer.
Oh.
And the reason is that she is the first ever seedless geranium. So she will do beautifully in California. If those of you are lucky enough to have a mountain home, or you have a home up in Minnesota where you go to for the summer, she's down to USDA Zone 4. So she's hardy to about like 30 below, and she'll do beautifully for us in Southern California.
She is one versatile lady.
She's an extraordinary plant. Extraordinary.
Wow.
So now the most exciting way to use her. So flower carpet rose, right? Let's say you've got flower carpet roses, or you've got another long blooming rose. Just go and put Geranium Roseanne in a space, and she will climb out of that space, and she'll start to climb all over these roses, right?
Oh, wow.
And so what happens is you've got flower carpet, you've got red or white or yellow, whatever it is, and then you've got these beautiful geranium blue flowers in amongst all these other flower carpet type colors. It is absolutely a divine mix. Your friends will come to your garden, they will look at this and they'll go, Tina, where did you get that idea? And Tina will look humbly at her feet and say, I don't know, but it wasn't easy.
No, I will give you full credit.
No,
Nicholas.
Don't do that.
Oh, in fact, we have so much more to talk about perennials. I'm going to extract a promise from you to come back and do another perennial part two show.
I'd love to. Thank you.
In the future.
Yeah.
So anyway, thank you so much for coming. I've got a whole page full of notes here for myself, and I'll re-listen to the podcast to glean all of the things that I didn't get to
Super.
Write down. Thanks again.
Look forward to coming back. Thank you.
Thank you.